10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
It's a little bit weird introducing our next guest because typically over the years, we'd say, hey, let's head over to the campus of Belmont. Let's bring in their head men's basketball coach, Rick Bird, on the line. And we're not saying that. It's probably the same for him considering he spent the last year not on the sideline for almost four decades. So that was a first for him. Rick is on the line with us, now OVC Hall of Famer, to go along with his other Hall of Fame, Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame induction. He's a member there, the NAIA Hall of Fame, the Greater Knoxville Hall of Fame, and, of course, Belmont's Hall of Fame. And he is also a nominee for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Rick, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. How weird has it been? Or is, let me ask you, has quarantine just been like the last year for you?
I've told a lot of people that same thing. It hadn't changed my life. The golf course didn't close, and so every day was the same.
So how was life? You did almost the same thing for almost four decades, and how weird was it to just sit back and observe? And was it easy or was it hard to do?
No, it was easy. I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that have retired from their jobs, and everybody feels a little differently about it. But I think when you know you were ready, I enjoyed it. I mean, I actually just had breakfast with Lenny Acuff, the coach at Lipscomb, and anybody that's coached gets it. He said, "And I wish I could just go and watch a basketball game and enjoy it, you know." And that's the way I felt for a long time, and this year I could.
And you were okay with that? It was a different perspective, and you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I did enjoy it because I was just ready to quit what I have ended up terming just trying not to win the next game. I mean, it's always you're trying to win the next game when you're a coach. And even if it's in July, the things you're doing are all about the games. And that adds up. And for some people, they love doing it forever. For me, it was just time. Now, you know, I missed – it's the first time in over 40 years I wasn't on a team. I missed that. I missed the players. I missed the coaching staff. I missed the athletic staff at Belmont. You know, there's things that you've done forever, and all of a sudden you're not doing them. But I didn't miss the stress of trying to win the next game.
How did you go about? Let's start early in your career, and as you shaped, you know, your style, how you were going to approach the game as a coach, how you were going to approach your team as a coach, how you were going to treat players, everything that comes, everything that's involved with being a head coach. How did that develop over the years to where, you know, at the end, I mean, you've built Belmont into this that, you know, everybody's accustomed to them winning, them accustomed to them always being in a certain spot or same or certain position every year to punch their ticket in the NCAA tournament. But how was that process for you to mold, to shape and mold yourself as a head coach?
Oh, I think to begin with, that a lot of it's your own personality and whatever skill set you've been given, how you grew up, who your influencers were, and so I think for the most part, how you treat people, how you go about trying to lead, I think a lot of that's instinctive, but there's no question in anybody in any job. Talking to you, you could answer the same question, and you just, if you don't learn as you move along, if you don't try to learn, you don't, it's trial and error. I mean, one of the things that, again, after 2 hours of coaching conversation with Lenny this morning. So I'm glad I didn't know what I didn't know when I coached my first game. You know, you think you do. You think you know. And there's just so much that changes. Players change. The game changed a lot. But it was so incremental. You know, it was just daily that you just adapt and move on and try to make yourself better. I think the older you get as a coach, that hopefully you're not quite as wound up. You're not, at least for me, I hope I didn't. There were times when I probably blamed the players, got on the players too hard, when the truth is I just wasn't doing the job I needed to be doing. Hopefully I got better at that.
How did you go about trying to the delicate balance of pushing buttons, cracking the whip, yet being there for them, having an honest conversation or an honest and personal relationship? How did you go, all those dynamics involved with being a head coach, how did you go about trying to maneuver through that?
I think that starts in the recruiting process. And one of the best things that I like to hear from players and parents was either while they were still at school or after they got through, that playing basketball at Belmont was what our basketball staff presented it to be. And so I think I became unafraid to tell players, good players, players who really wanted it, what our standards were, how we operated, what we would expect from them. And then when they came, there were no surprises. Our personalities didn't change as coaches. Not to say that I didn't get a little angry every now and then, but I got better at it. And so I think they feel like they were treated honestly and fairly and genuinely. And I think if you can do that in anything, that's where you start. And the rest of it still becomes pretty instinctive. You know, you talked about pushing buttons when you should get on them a little bit, or when maybe you just need to back away and you just played a bad game and you say, hey guys, we're going to take the next 2 days off. Sounds crazy, but sometimes that's the best thing to do.
Rick Bird on the line with us. You won 805 career games, and that game against Temple in the NCAA tournament, the play-in game in Dayton, it doesn't change your resume. Yes, it added a victory, but it didn't change your resume. All those Hall of Fames that I said, that wasn't changing the narrative for you, but it was special, and you know that. That was the goal. You'd been there so many times. You've been close, and you hadn't been able to knock down that door. What did I know it's about the kids, but since we're having you on and we're talking about you, what did it truly mean to you, Rick, to actually knock down that door and win that NCAA tournament game?
Now that's you're making it tough on me now, because I just it is about a whole lot of things. Everybody has their own life, and everybody has their own hopes and dreams and goals. Let me just put it this way: Tom Watson got close a lot of times before he won a major golf tournament, for example, and everybody, either as a player or a coach. It's rare when you just jump in there and you can do it right off the bat. But when you've been, seven times that we had gone, and sure, we were a 15 seed or a 13 seed, and we were playing a top 15 team, and that was going to be unlikely every time we played. But it still becomes the thing that people talk about. And it becomes the thing that you'd like to do more than anything else. And so probably the last 7, 8, 10 years of my career, that would sort of be the thing, the question that would come, how much would that mean if you won it? And the more people ask you, the more important it becomes. So it was great on every level. And if you make me say it's great on a personal level, I'd say it certainly was.
Well, it, before I flip it to Willie, Coach, it's because of the body. It goes back to what I said at the beginning. those questions were being asked because of the body of work and the culture that you had created there. That's why they were getting asked, because, like I said, everybody just was accustomed to you being in that spot every year.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and I think we do that to athletes too often, or coaches too often, that get there and can't get it done. And that doesn't mean we won seven conference championships, final games out of eight, and then all of a sudden, the last 4 years I coached, we didn't win the conference tournament any of those years, and the last two we lost to Murray in the final game. And nothing was different about the way I approached it. I guess the numbers just finally caught up with me a little bit. But you do get – it's unfair, and it's unfair to people that have been really excellent in their field to say they can't win the big one, I think. I think the overall body of work and the words you used is how somebody should be judged. And if they fall a little short and never win a major golf tournament or – tennis tournament or NBA championship or NCAA championship, doesn't mean they weren't really good at what they did.
I do think that part of it can be underappreciated. We're talking to former Belmont coach Rick Byrd, just named to the OVC Hall of Fame, the latest of these great accolades he's been getting, deservedly so. So, Coach, since it's the OVC, I can remember being at the press conference when you guys announced that you were leaving the Atlantic Sun and going to the OVC, which was, I would imagine, it would have been a pretty difficult decision to make on some levels, particularly as it pertained to your team. You know, you guys had had success in that league. Your arch rival was in there, so you had to decide whether to keep that, what the benefits were from going over to the OVC. So take me back to that time. What was the key part of the equation for you guys to realize that the OVC was the right move for you?
Well, Willie, first of all, that is so much of an institutional decision. I mean, certainly an athletic one, but it's a presidential level, athletic director level, whoever the president wants to involve, the athletic board, in weighing the pros and cons. I think, so from my perspective, what was really good about it for us was that all of a sudden, we're playing people twice a year, once in Kerb Event Center, that college basketball fans in Nashville had grown up hearing about and knowing about. Tennessee State, Tennessee Tech, Austin Peay, certainly Murray State's success. And they're just the only one in the Atlantic Sun that fit that bill was obviously Lipscomb. So I think our crowds grew. I think interest in the program grew. Media would be more interested in Belmont against Austin Peay, the Nashville media, than they would Belmont against North Florida. So that was the good part. I think the question mark, the biggest one, was all of a sudden we're the only private school in this conference. There's a lot of things different about private and public in terms sometimes of resources. Cost of a scholarship that Belmont had to pay was a lot more than what the state schools in the OVC were. And in Atlantic Sun, there was quite a few, Lipscomb, Mercer, Stetson, others over the years. Samford used to be in the league, Campbell, those schools, Gardner-Webb, a lot of schools like Belmont in that league. But again, overall, I think it was a terrific move for us, and we were fortunate to jump right in and be competitive.
Well, that's for sure, and I remember thinking at the time, you know, if you're strictly thinking which league is easier to win, I think I probably would have said that the OVC would be a little tougher to win, that generally speaking you start with Murray State, you go on down the line, Austin Peay has had a lot of, you know, consistent success, that would have been a tricky part of the equation for sure. But you guys, to your credit, that's probably has to be something you're pretty proud of, as you jumped in there. And that, you know, because generally speaking, I think it's safe to say the OVC ranks ahead of the Atlantic Sun from top to bottom most years, but you guys jumped right in there and for the most part have been consistent contenders.
Well, Willie, I think we would all say if we're competitive that one of the things that you like when people say, and I heard several comments, it's going to be a whole lot tougher to win in the LEC than it was the Atlantic Sun, and it makes it just a little bit nicer when you're able to do it. But to be fair to the Atlantic Sun, whatever metric you want to choose, whether it's the net ratings or the RPI or Sagarin or Ken Pomeroy's numbers, over the last 10, 15 years even, the teams have flip-flopped some. And I would agree the perception is the OVC, and maybe is a little bit over that period of time, but certainly some years it would surprise folks to see that the Atlantic Sun came out ahead in the overall ranking. Maybe because they've got fewer schools now and the LBC's had, you know, three or four that were in the, you know, the 300s, and that hurts the league overall. The top tier, tougher to get through. The top four in the LBC, I think, has been stronger overall.
Chase, go ahead.
We're talking to Rick Byrd, a multi-time Hall of Famer and former Belmont basketball coach. So, you know, listening to you to talk with Darren and Willie over all of this and, you know, the kids and the people that you've coached, obviously Casey Alexander is somebody you have a great relationship with. So what was it like to kind of step back and let him do his thing but also be that proud mentor and former coach?
Well, first off, Casey has been terrific. And Belmont, the athletic staff, the administration has been terrific to keep me involved and make me feel comfortable and welcome there. Casey's gone out of his way, and I appreciate that. It's a wonderful relationship between a coach and a player that you loved having on your team because of how competitive and what a leader Casey was. So it was pretty easy. Even though we've all got egos, and we could all say, you know, maybe Belmont ought to drop off a little bit so I can show everybody how good a coach I was. That's kind of a natural human reaction. In this case, it was easy not to be that way.
You've probably over the years heard the phrase, you know, it's hard to be the guy to follow the guy. But why was Casey, in your opinion, just from some of the things you just said, the perfect guy to follow you?
Well, there's just so many things fall into place. The fact that he was a really good, and maybe the best word is important, player for us when he was in school there, and then a longtime assistant who really should get more credit for our climb through Division I than he gets, and I mean that really about the whole staff as well. But he was a guy that was pushing me to go from being a small college coach to a Division I head coach, and the things that you have to do in recruiting and in strength and conditioning and some things that I'd rather be playing golf than doing. Mm-hmm. So he had a lot to do with that. And then he goes out and gets a job at Stetson and does a nice job for 2 years and then takes the Lipscomb program and takes it to heights that considerable. I mean, and so I didn't make the decision, but that made it easy. When he goes to the finals, the NIT, and goes to the NCAA the year before that, all you got to do is watch his teams play to prove what kind of basketball coach he is. And then they're hiring a guy that they know is a quality human being.
Yeah, very well said. Absolutely. Did you at any point during all of this going on with the coronavirus and, you know, sports just stopping, did you ever stop and think how you would have handled it if you had been in that situation as the head coach?
Yeah, what I've been thinking lately is, you know, if I'd have kept coaching for a while, I could be playing golf every day like I am right now and getting paid for it.
Yeah, collecting checks.
And so, you know, I'm a little disappointed that I made a premature decision. I don't know. I was old school. And I was one that pretty much believed that our student athletes should have an opportunity to be regular students. And so our out-of-season stuff is not nearly as consistent as it's become these days. Now, I wouldn't have liked all this. I wouldn't like them being away from campus, all that kind of stuff. Heck, I would even miss basketball camps. But it probably wouldn't hurt our program as much as it might others who think they need to be practicing every day and hour they're allowed to.
Coach, have you got time for one more quick one here? And this,
sure.
This may be unfair because it may not. It requires a little thought because I think we've all been thinking, especially as sports fans, right? We're sitting here, we have no games to cover on a daily basis, but there's been so much great discussion that has come in the last few weeks about really a role of a coach, right? A lot of coaches are looking at themselves; they're having very important conversations with their players. And so what are your thoughts when that comes to mind for you? The important conversations you have with your players that don't involve, you know, the game of basketball, that, you know, you're trying to develop people to be successful. You're trying to maybe open up their minds a little bit. What are your thoughts as we go through this time of the role of a coach?
Well, Willie, I have, at least the longer I coached, the more I considered myself simply part of our student-athletes' overall education, and we really are educators, and the things we say and do on a daily basis is really important. I know that Casey has done a really good job. I couldn't have told you what Zoom was 3 months ago, okay? But I know he's done a terrific job of staying in touch with his team, both all together and individually, and not missing out on those moments when you can continue to be a big part of their lives. So I think a lot of coaches have done that during this time. But I also think it's, in many cases, one of the weakest things about our profession right now. So much pressure to win games that we forget we're really a part, just simply a part of a big one. But we shape those 15 kids on our teams and the student assistants, and we shape a lot of their lives, and we don't even realize we're doing it. So we better do it right.
Let's end on a light note real quick as we wrap up. So your dream foursome on the golf course, who would your other three be? What would be your dream foursome?
Wow. I mean, are you talking about like great professional golfers or friends?
I'm saying Rick Bird gets to choose three people.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say local people because when you start doing this, you're excluding a whole lot more than you're including. So I think I'd play with – we're just going to – this is such hypothetical. I'm going to say I'm a fan of Rory McIlroy. I'm a fan of Jordan Spieth. Let's put those in there.
Okay.
If we can, since it's so hypothetical, let's bring Bobby Jones back and put him in there. Okay.
Okay. All right. Mm. I love it. That's what I wanted.
All right.
You won't keep playing golf. I know you won't get to play with him, but keep playing golf. Thanks for doing this as always.
None of those guys, by the way, would have wanted me as their partner.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know them, but we'll just go on that assumption. But congrats on getting into the OVC Hall of Fame.
I appreciate it.
All right, that is Rick Bird, legendary Belmont coach, 33 years on the sidelines as the Bruins head coach. We will come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21+.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.